Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Invasion by Ivan Cal, narrated by Ryan Burke. Prologue. The guiding force, or Iris to her oldest friends, was floating in a large room deep beneath the ground. Rather, a projection of her was, one that she used when interacting with most other beings. Her true self was a computer core the size of planets, with branches and relay stations spread out throughout the multiverse. A part of her was focused on the world, on maintaining all of its systems and monitoring it. But in truth, it was a small part of her operations. Most of her processing was focused on the war, the never-ending conflict that they seemed to have been involved in for so long. Yet it was a conflict that they had no choice but to pursue. Their enemies did not make deals, and they never stopped coming. Chaos and order were monsters, seeking to devour everything. Iris and Heart of the Mountain were the only people in their way. Others who had the power to oppose them chose to cower and run away, and they blamed Iris and Heart of the Mountain for the war itself. So, they and theirs were all that was standing against the two beings that had the power to devour entire universes in moments. In front of her was a large window, and through it she could see the being who slumbered in the center of the world, or at least a part of her. Moirai, named for fate and destiny, had entered a healing sleep long, long ago. A coma, really, or so they had thought for the longest of times. Now they knew that she was awake, or at least a part of her was. Morgan had sent a message through the Tower Master, Kai Jiaovin, a message from Moirai that she was still there and waking. And that was the news that meant everything to them. She had been injured ages ago, in a fight against chaos and order, a part of her soul damaged, her mind and body mangled. Over time, Iris had managed to repair her body, but her soul was far harder to mend. The entire world was made, in part, to help her heal. Every ascended had a tether attached to their soul, through their soul implants that took a part of the energy that they accumulated through life, what they called experience, the energy that came from killing other beings or just accomplishing tasks. There was more to it than that, of course. Iris guided everything. She played with the energy generated through life and other means, and she used it to improve both the Ascended and heal Moirai. The world resided in a small universe, one where all life had died out. They had come in and taken over, bringing other races and building a research station on a massive scale. The main goal of their experiments were always twofold. One, heal Moirai, and two, try and replicate the growth of a spirit artist. Spirit artists were warriors who cultivated their power through knowledge and will, who took in the base energy of the universe into themselves and made it their own. They then used that to improve their bodies and eventually bind their souls to their body and spirit into a perfectly forged unit. It was something that made it impossible for any outside force to overtake a soul, to dominate a mind. A spirit artist was immune to outside interference. A stronger power could kill them, smother their souls like a tiny flame, but a true spirit artist of the seventh step could never be turned, never be forced to do something against their will. The Heart of the Mountain, Oxalis, or the great lord to the people in this world, wasn't a spirit artist. His power came from his own understanding of the universe. His will and soul were simply too powerful to be overcome in the same way. His connection to Moirai shielded him somewhat as well, but his people, his armies, were vulnerable to the enemy heralds. True, chaos and order didn't have many heralds, but it was an issue when they faced their forces. Only a few beings in Oxalis's armies could match a herald, and they needed more. That was why they were trying to replicate the spirit arts, which were currently the only known way of bonding a body and soul in such a way that they could no longer be influenced. The spirit arts were the creation of Oxalis's daughter, Rhianna, known to her people as the Lifebringer, or Ryu-Anna. She had invented them, mastered the way to forge soul, spirit, and body. The relationship between Oxalis and his daughter was tense, to say the least. The rift between them was thousands of years in the making, and while they had repaired some of it, they were only now just back on speaking terms. Rhianna had shared the ways of the spirit arts with Iris, But her method was too personal, too focused on decades of learning and cultivating power. It was too slow, and too few people were capable of reaching the seventh step. The amount of spirit artists in Rihanna's universe was merely a fraction of its total population. They needed more for their war. That was where this world came into play. Here, the Ascended were meant to grow more quickly. Nonetheless, their experiment hadn't borne fruit, not until recently. Morgan was the first who had managed to take that last step to bridge soul, spirit, and body. He had done so while his soul was under direct assault, indicating that perhaps it was pressure being put on the soul was required for the seventh step. It was not required for true spirit artists, but the Ascended were not counted among them, as their method of advancement was too different. Now, with Moirai waking, and their having data on how an Ascended could achieve the seventh step, things were looking up. "I'm leaving," Oxalis said, his eyes still looking through the window at Moirai.
"Where to?"
Iris asked as he turned around and started walking. He gestured with a hand, and space split open in front of him. He passed through and disappeared from all the sensors she had on the world, but not really from her sight. A projection of her on the world remained where she was, while another appeared in front of Oxalis in another universe, just as he stepped out of the crack in space.
"The fact that Chaos sent a herald to search for the world is worrying," Oxalis said as he walked down a long corridor illuminated by white light.
Iris floated next to him. "My analysis indicates that it was only a coincidence. They are searching for all of our bases, and it was chance that they stumbled onto that one." Oxalis turned his eyes on her projection and gave her a look that she recognized intimately.
"Fine," she sighed. "It is worrying. My data suggests that it truly was a coincidence, but I have learned that data is often flawed."
"We only know what we know," Oxalis said with a nod.
Iris agreed with him. They couldn't know what their enemies knew. Not these enemies, at least. There was no way to infiltrate Chaos and Order, and their followers were fanatically loyal. They could only infer information based on what they were doing.
"So,"
Iris started as they reached a large open room with a window taking up most of the far wall. "We assume that they know what we are doing, and that they know that we have a pocket universe dedicated to our experiments. Since they found it, but Chaos didn't come spilling in, we also assume that this was a regular scouting force that stumbled on our universe by accident."
"But why not call Chaos when they figured out they had found something?"
Oxalis asked as he walked over to the window and looked out of it.
"They had to have known that we have countermeasures in place, and that you would respond quickly. But they were attempting to follow one of the links from the tower floor to the world. If they understood what that was, then they were looking for Moirai," Iris concluded.
Oxalis grimaced.
"If Chaos struck when she was still defenseless..."
"Yes," Iris agreed. "We can't allow that to happen."
"Which is why I am going to go to Hestia, to try and talk with the other Titans," Oxalis said with a weary sigh.
"You sure you want to do that?" she asked. "Hestia might be willing to talk with you, but the others? They definitely haven't forgotten your cracking Athoria in half, and I doubt they will forgive, especially since you've been less than respectful when speaking with them."
"Because they are arrogant fools, and act like children despite being millions of years old."
"Uh-huh. And you definitely don't act like a child, ever."
He turned his eyes on her and glared. She raised an eyebrow and waited for him to answer. When he wisely didn't say anything, she nodded.
"Right. Now, why would you want to talk with them?"
"I am sure that they have something that could help Moirai heal more quickly," Oxalis said.
"Perhaps. It will take a lot for them to give it to you, if they even have something."
"I can't just sit there and wait. We know that she is there now, that she survived whole. Now it is just a matter of speeding up her recovery."
"Very well," she agreed. "And what do you want done with the world in the meantime?"
He thought about it for a few seconds and then spoke.
"How long until you can replicate what Morgan did?"
"I've already started processing the data. It will take me a few months, maybe a year, to build a new system. I can then push the updates to the Ascendant's implants relatively easy. Then I'll need to devise ways for their souls to suffer pressure or attacks. I don't know yet how to do that efficiently. Either monsters that can attack the soul or something else, a disease, perhaps. I'll think about it.
Whatever you decide is best. For now, I want you to take the barriers down fully and allow the continents to interact with one another. Release stronger monsters into the wild. It will force those who refuse to enter the tower to face more dangerous foes. It'll make them stronger.
It'll make some stronger, Iris corrected.
Oxalis nodded. Yes, but we need them. Strength is required regardless if they reach the seventh step or not.
Yes, we do need them, Iris said sadly. Oxalis turned his eyes back to the window and looked out at the massive black hole surrounded by countless stations and ships moving from one to the other. Half of the stations were made out of artificial materials, metal and ceramics, compressed matter that was nigh indestructible by all but the greatest of technologies. The other half were organic, pulsing pieces of flesh and uneven growths. The ships standing guard were as massive as some of the stations, the largest being hundreds of kilometers long. Some of those were empty of all life, being drone ships that she controlled personally. The last group of ships, standing guard across from the ships made out of metal, were the Eldritch Horrors, beings of flesh and bone floating in space. They were the great beasts of the Krashenar people, Oxalis's greatest allies and friends. They comprised most of his armada. The Krashenar were above all the other races that served him, their loyalty and might being without question. Other races had presence here as well. The Children of the Mountain were among them, as well as what was left of the Urassi, the old empire. Different factions from different universes, ships running on high tech, and those built with magic, even those that were the meld of the two. Too many of them had lost their homes to chaos and order, and now called this wretched and cold place their home, the safe haven that Oxalis and Iris had created to harbor them all, to prepare and build up their forces for the last battle against their enemies.
And I'd like you to send a message to the Seventh, Oxalis said. See if he would be willing to bring Araxi to the world, to see if it could reach Moirai.
Iris tilted her head in surprise. The Seventh was the leader of the Krashenar, and Araxi was the great beast that the Seventh used to travel the stars, but Araxi was also more. The great Araxi was, in many ways, Moirai's sire. It was Araxi's genetic material that was used as blueprints for Moirai's creation, a melding of human and Krashenar genetic knowledge. She was unique, but perhaps Oxalis was right. Perhaps now that Moirai was waking, Araxi might be able to reach her where he himself couldn't. I'll send the messages immediately, Iris said.
Thank you.
They remained there for a few minutes more, just looking out at their home, at their people, knowing that all of their lives rested on their shoulders. Chapter 1 Morgan was blinded, his highly sensitive eyes hurting as if he had poked them with burning rods.
Gah!
Morgan screamed as he fell to the ground and rolled over the grass, evading an attack coming from above, as his other senses informed him of its coming. He heard and felt the attack impact the ground, followed by a loud yell and the sound of something striking something else. He was too busy screaming to really pay attention.
Morgan! Get up, you idiot!
Lucius's voice pierced through the noise, followed by more sounds of battle. Morgan grimaced and then switched his forms, going from his combat form to his hunting form, replacing his eyes and healing them in the process. His mind took a moment to adjust to a much different body, and he managed to get up on his knees as his bones cracked and his joints changed. His eyes were now those of a predatory cat that he had found, killed, and consumed some 3 years ago. Its vision was great both in the dark and during the day, and also allowed him to see heat. He looked at the monster they were fighting, a terrible and powerful monster that was level 75, an Elder Glitter. It was just as terrible and horrifying as the name suggested. A massive creature the size of a school bus, it had a body that looked as if it were covered in glitter. It had wings that resembled those of a firefly, though its main body was squat and almost bean-like. Its head looked like that of a bowhead whale, except that it had wicked teeth like a shark, and claws that could rip a person apart on the ends of its feet. Vestella bashed its head over with her big tower shield, then struck with her emerald mace, and then her bear summon swiped at the glitter's side. It was massive, at least 3 meters long and 2 tall, one on all 4 legs,
The bear was also altered with eldritch parts. Around its neck was a mass of tendrils with wicked hooks on them, looking like a disgusting mane. Its jaw was unhinged, and the lower part split into two that opened sideways to show a maw filled with sharp teeth. Its claws were elongated and sharp, and its fur pure white. The bear was covered with blood-red ice, making it look as if it were wearing armor. The glitter jumped away right into a barrier raised by Clara. Lucius swooped down from above and swiped his two swords, sending two arcs of air down on top of the glitter. The monster twinkled, the colors on its side shifting as it expelled something that stopped Lucius's attacks. Everyone cursed as they quickly covered their eyes, the secondary effect of whatever the glitter was doing coming with a blinding light. Morgan turned away before the light flashed and ran toward one of the nearby trees at the edge of the clearing. His hunting form had six limbs, each ending in three-fingered limbs that ended in thick claws, most suited for ripping into something or climbing, which was what he used them for now, as he climbed on top of a tall tree. This form wasn't typically suited to fighting. It was more a stealth and ambush kind of a form. Quickly, he found a place in between two branches and looked out at his team fighting the monster. Clara was keeping it on the ground by creating barriers every time it tried to fly up. Hexna stood next to her and was throwing her black fire at the glitter from afar while also protecting Clara in case it tried to get to her. Vess kept it occupied with her summon and kept stunning and interrupting it with her shield, while Lucius harried it from above. Morgan was the one who was supposed to put it down, while Hexna and Lucius harried and injured it enough for his finisher. The five of them had gotten very good at this kind of thing over the last 5 years since they'd left the tower. Once, fighting a monster like this one might have made them hesitate, but by now it was routine. Once in position, Morgan focused on his arm and activated his devastation bow form. A large bow formed out of his upper left arm, as tall as Morgan himself, with twisting wood and pieces of dark metal lining its outer arc. The string was made from the hair of a shadow lurker, a monster that skulked deep beneath the ground and had hair as tough as steel. The string itself was black and misted slightly, with shadowy wisps that were strange to look at. With his right hand, he pulled the string back with the tiny indent in his clawed fingers, which he had specifically designed for that purpose, while his lower right limb reached out into the item on his lower left wrist. His hand sank into the darkness of the Shadow Realm's Vambrace, a two-part item that he hadn't consumed and made part of his forms. He had become very good at estimating the amount of energy something would require, and he knew that having his Vambraces as part of himself would drain him too much. Besides, he could use that energy better for something else. He pulled out an arrow, long and bland-looking. It was all the same color, without any special markings. He knocked it, and aimed as he started pulling mass from his right Vambrace. He initiated his mass exchange ability and prepared his phased shot, which was still one of his most powerful combos, when he had the time to set it up properly, at least. With the others keeping the glitter occupied, he had the time to prepare it. A few seconds later, he felt his special arrow reach a limit of how much mass it could take. Any more, and it would shatter on its own. So he stopped pushing mass into it and took aim. His sharpshooter skill had grown a lot over the years, so he knew that his aim was going to be true. Vess bashed her shield forward and hit the glitter in the side, sending it skidding across the grass. Her bear barreled into it a moment later, and it fell to the side. Hexna threw a ball of black and green fire at it, and the glitter jumped up, beating its wings. It was injured, the glittering effect of its skin ruined by white blood leaking from several wounds. As it tried to escape, Clara dropped a dome barrier on top of it, sending it tumbling to the ground. Lucius dove and whirled, lightning and wind dancing around him as he cut alongside its back and opened up a long gash, as well as cut off one of its wings. The glitter roared, and Morgan focused. He used piercing shot and released his phase shot. The arrow flew forward, leaving the phased space the moment it ceased being in contact with him. The sound barrier shattered as suddenly a small object with a mass equivalent to several times more than a normal arrow flew through the air at an incredible speed. The arrow crossed the distance in an instant and hit its target head-on. The glitter's head exploded into gore, chunks of flesh flying everywhere. It didn't stop there, of course. The arrow hit the ground next, ripping it apart and shaking the earth. The monster was dead,
and a notification popped up informing him of them accomplishing the quest and receiving the reward. He pushed it aside, jumped down from his spot, and hobbled over to the others, as his feet weren't really meant for a human-like stride in this form. As he approached, he switched back to his base form. His body shifted, and bones dissolved while others grew. His clothes shifted along his body, not part of his form, but actually a living plant-based organism that he had created 2 years ago. The fibers could shift and change form, so that his clothes could always adapt to his body, and he didn't need to consume and recreate them by spending his own energy. And, well, having his clothes be a part of his body was weird.
"Good job, everyone!" Morgan yelled as he walked over. Lucius glared at him. "You forgot to watch out for the light attack!"
Morgan grinned. "It all worked out in the end," he said, waving his concerns away. Lucius narrowed his eyes at him, but then let it go.
"At least now we will have what we came here for,"
Clara added. Morgan nodded. They had a quest from the Guiding Force, which they had gotten after they arrived in these mountains. But they had also picked up a contract from the guild that ruled these parts, Tristam. They were promised a small amount of ascension crystals, but more importantly, finishing this contract meant they would be finalizing a trading agreement between their two guilds. The latter item was what they were far more interested in. They had been traveling to other guilds on diplomatic missions, trying to establish better relations between theirs and other guilds. Things had been hard in the rest of the world. Stronger monsters had started to appear, and the old monsters that had once kept to their lairs were now roaming. Strange wrecks had begun to appear on the northern shores, too, and sea monsters were being seen more frequently. Things had changed in the last few years, and no one knew quite why. Morgan had his suspicions, but he didn't voice them, of course. For now, they were trying to make sure that their Skyreach guild had everything that they needed to grow. The fact that it was located in a low-level valley at the southwestern edge of the continent, a bit out of the way of everything and everyone of importance, meant that they were isolated for the most part, and ignored. Their names were known, of course. Morgan and his closest people were some of the highest-leveled individuals in the world. They were feared, if not exactly respected. When their tower-diving team returned, no one had believed that they had returned from beyond the third floor. Ragnar Rom had told the other guildmasters that they had reached beyond the third floor, told them what they had seen there, and how they were returned, but people just didn't believe. They were called liars and fakes, most believing that they just hid on the third floor and came back out, claiming that coming back from beyond the third floor was impossible. At that time, they had all been raw from the losses they suffered, and they had not reacted kindly to the accusations. There was no killing, of course. The Guiding Force's rules would punish anyone who tried something like that, but words were said, and the relationships between great guilds had been harmed in the process. Still, not much of that impacted Skyreach. They were far away from the politics, and they hadn't sought to get involved either. Morgan focused on improving his territory, trying to help his people reach high levels, and trying to teach them how to do what he himself had done, achieve the seventh step.
"Set up a perimeter," Morgan said as he walked over to the monster corpse. "I'll see what I can harvest from this thing."
Clara grimaced and turned away as he started cutting into the monster's body. He was quite interested in seeing what kind of properties the glitter's body held. Harvesting and consuming different organs had kind of become his thing.
Chapter 2.
The return to their home took a few weeks, by the end of which Morgan was completely done with everything and just wanted to shut himself in his laboratory. They reached the small fort in the mountains that guarded the pass that led into their valley, and from there they used one of the few teleporters that they had in their territory to go directly to their home, Skyreach. The town, a city now, had changed a lot in the recent years. The mountain that was their base resembled a thick lance sticking out of the ground. It was an old and inactive volcano, with a large plateau around midway up the side of the mountain. Surrounding the mountain were tall stone walls, declaring the boundary of the Reach City. Inside them was an orderly mess of buildings. The streets were straight lines going from the wall all the way to the base of the mountain, where large elevators were carrying goods and people up to the top. Some were also climbing the winding road carved into the side of the mountain. Everywhere one looked, there was activity. Their home had become a large city, filled with so many people that Morgan didn't even know the vast majority of them. It had become a shock to realize that had happened. Once, he had known every person in his guild, and now it had become too large for that. The plateau was where the guild hold was, a large area of about 100 meters across, surrounded by the same type of stone walls. It was adorned with metal plates and towers manned by Skyguard. Its interior was occupied by a few buildings. On one end, they had a small training yard next to the Skyguard dorm, with another big, dorm-like building across from it for the rest of the staff that served the guild hold. At the far end was a large building that served as their headquarters, the Great Hall. It had originally looked something like Meduseld, the hall from the Lord of the Rings movies, but with upgrades it had changed significantly. One side of it now held a big storehouse, while the other was a large, dome-like building that was Morgan's greenhouse, itself attached to his laboratory. The top of the hall had a tower where Morgan's and Vess's room was. Behind the hall, dug into the side of the mountain, was their smithy, which now extended deep into the hollow part of the volcano inside. Smoke was leaving through pipes, leading the fumes out on the other side of the mountain. The biggest addition to their guild hold, though, was a massive stone tower above the plateau, carved into the side of the mountain and looming over everything. It had taken a lot of their resources to build it, but Morgan knew that it had been worth it considering what they had gained through it. As their squad appeared on the plateau teleporter, people walked over to greet them. The fort had to have sent word the moment they saw them approaching. The first people to walk, or rather run, over were Carissa and a tiny scamp who ran ahead of her. Lucius stepped forward and hugged his son, then stood up with him, still in his arms, and hugged Carissa. His wife was the administrator of their guild, and ruled in their stead. In reality, she ran most of everything, while the rest of them served as something resembling a board of directors. Morgan left them to their reunion and walked off with Vess. Everyone from the party split off, talking with the people waiting for them. Morgan didn't have anyone to wait on him. Vess was his family, and as far as anyone else was concerned, they knew him well enough to know that after coming back from a mission, the only thing he wanted to do was rest. The two of them made their way to the Great Hall, and then upstairs to their room. Once behind closed doors, Vess dropped her gear to the side and dropped on the bed.
"Ah, home, finally," she murmured into the covers.
"It wasn't that bad this time," Morgan told her with a smile on his face. She rolled over so that she could look at him.
"If I could, I would never leave this place. Our home."
Morgan's smile turned sad. He knew why she felt this way. After the tower, after they had lost so many people, Val, Vess's twin brother included, everything had changed. They had seen the tower and knew what it was for. Of course, there were many secrets that they weren't privy to, and they were still trying to figure things out. Still, Morgan's goal had always been to return to the tower, to finish it, and leave to join his father. Vess shared that dream, but the rest of the world was... it was taxing, seeing their petty issues and greed. The tower had put many things into perspective for all of them who had gone through that experience. The rest of the world seemed so much lesser after that experience.
"We can't grow strong here," Morgan told her.
There were no high-leveled monsters in their valley. It was a good place for a safe home, but it wasn't meant to push people to grow stronger. For that, they had to look elsewhere.
"I know," Vess said slowly.
It had been hard. They had spent a couple of years in the tower, and had leveled a lot and leveled fast. Morgan had barely been level 30 when he entered the first floor, and he left as level 60. Now, all of them had reached close to level 70, but none of them had made that last step to actually reach it. Morgan himself was level 69, with quite a bit of essence still left to reach the next level up. It was why they had been trying to hunt every strong monster that they could find.
"The only thing that we could do is go back in the tower," Morgan said slowly.
It was almost as if he was admitting defeat. His plan was to teach others how to do what he had done, to take the seventh step. But how could one explain what it was like to have his soul attacked directly, to believe that he was about to die? They had all felt some of that attack, but what had happened to him had been a step beyond that, and he just didn't know how to explain what he had done.
Sibylla, his soul implant,
was trying to help, but even now when he could communicate with her any time, she still had some limits to what she...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?